Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Paddock Project. I am your host, Tiggy, and I'm here to recap the Austrian Grand Prix, which was incredible. And I'm here with none other than Emily Selleck, a senior writer for Motorsport. Em, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited. I know we met, probably like 9 months ago now for the first time.
Yeah.
And it's been so exciting, like following you and seeing how engaged your audience is. So I'm really excited to chat.
Thank you. And same to you. I mean, your writing and your coverage has been absolutely incredible. And I love the trajectory motorsport is on. So lots to discuss.
Thank you very much.
But the Austrian Grand Prix, what a banger. And it was also announced, I think today, we're recording Sunday, that it is extended to 2041, which is a huge vote of confidence in a Grand Prix and in an era when there's increasing calendar rotation, stuff like that. So that was a big story. Do you have thoughts on the extension?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. It's like if F1 lacks you, like you're on the calendar like until like for eternity, essentially. I mean, it's been kind of the same for, I think Miami has a really long contract. Australia also extended. But, you know, it's a great track. It's a favorite of the drivers. I think, you know, the whole paddock, you know, enjoy going there. So I think it's a good choice for them to keep on the calendar.
Yeah, I fully agree. Well, before we dive into everything, Em, would love for you to just introduce yourself to anyone who might not be familiar. I'm sure everybody has read your stuff, but you're doing so much. Like, how did you get into motorsport? Talk to us about your role right now.
Yeah, so I work for Motorsport Network across motorsport.com, a little bit of autosport as well. Predominantly, I kind of lead all things off track in the culture vertical. So that could be, you know, entertainment, pop culture, an in-depth interview with a driver about, you know, stuff they're doing away from the track. It's a real mixed bag. And then I also, on race weekends, I do regular race coverage. But I'm from Australia and motorsport is, or always has been, a part of my life. My family are huge motorsport fans. So F1's, been on the background in my house forever. But I kind of worked in all areas of news and then moved into sport a bit more full-time about 4 years ago. And it's been a lot of fun. It's definitely a great time to be working in F1 with the movie and everything going on.
Yeah, 100%. Well, speaking of the movie, let's dive into the first piece of news before we get to all things Austria. But I have been paying very close attention to the box office numbers. I've been waiting for these numbers to drop because I know, Em, you were also at the premiere in New York and we've both seen the movie. And so you have your own opinions and whatnot, and you kind of see reactions in the F1 sphere. But it's always a question mark of like, how is this going to land with the broader audience? And spoiler alert, it has done really well in its opening weekend. It's brought in $144 million, which is Apple's first box office hit. And it's also Brad Pitt's biggest ever weekend, opening weekend for him, which is huge because he's such a big actor. So I expect the momentum to continue, but it's across the box office numbers, the Rotten Tomatoes scores, the critics, there have definitely been some critical pieces on it. But overall, it seems to be kind of hitting it out of the park in a way that maybe not everyone expected it would.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny you say that, because I think about 2 months ago, I was a bit concerned because I had not seen any promo anywhere. And I took kind of an unofficial survey just with my friends who are all like very switched on into pop culture, and not a single one of them had knew there was an F1 movie coming out. And I was like, oh my gosh, I think on a podcast, I said, F1 needs to ramp it up. And I feel like they heard me, because gosh, you can't escape it, can you? I mean, as you mentioned, it's Apple's like first success, essentially. And I mean, one thing to know about Apple is that they put out these films and TV shows and just bizarrely do not promote them. I feel like this was the first film that they've actually properly, you know, thrown their weight behind. It also is a relatively quiet market in the cinemas right now. There's not too much competition. So I think it would have been surprising if it wasn't kind of, you know, topping the box office results. But nonetheless, it's, you know, really great to see.
Yeah, 100% agree. And they spent, I think, over $100 million on marketing. But similar to you, like before the past few weeks, like the premiere circuit and everything, I really hadn't heard that much. And I was also very nervous, but they certainly ramped it up and it has paid off. So also, I loved your article. You've written a few pieces like around the movie, but I absolutely loved your thoughts on it. I think you were one of the first people to speak about the sort of treatment of women in the movie, which I think was really important. So I'm curious what it was like to put that out. Was it scary to put out? How's the reception been? What's that been like?
Yeah, I mean, look, firstly, I appreciate it. We saw the movie for the first time in Montreal. They had a media screening, and I think everyone in that room was quite a harsh critic. And I do want to make it clear, I think, you know, it's a good film. I think everyone should go see it. It's good for all of us if this movie does well. And I'm certainly not someone that, like, hates on things for the sake of it. I mean, I think that's kind of a reductive word, but I think there are some people that think it makes you more cool or interesting to be a hater, and that's definitely not the case here. I think the crux of it is really that the way women were portrayed in the film sort of at best is a bit problematic, at worst is almost making a bit of a mockery of women who work in Formula One. And it's surprising, I think, because there were so many cooks in the kitchen and so many stakeholders who, you know, ostensibly want the portrayal of women to be positive. I mean, we asked Jerry and Joe, producer Jerry Bruckheimer and director Joe Kaczynski about it, and they sort of said, it's all about entertainment. We know not everything is, you know, going to be realistic, but it's about entertainment. And, you know, I'll put my hands up and say the racing scenes, even though they weren't realistic, I do think, you know, serve that storyline. Yeah. But to have Brad Pitt, you know, hooking up with a female technical director, I don't think makes the story any better at all. So I don't really think that argument kind of stacks up, to be honest.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. And I think some of our listeners were also surprised, not that everything should fall onto Lewis Hamilton's shoulders, but of like the fact that he is a producer and supports so many of these causes. It's almost like it's surprising that some of these things made the final cut in a way.
Yeah, I think it's a very astute observation because, you know, I often think it's possibly a little bit unfair that we put so much on Lewis's shoulders because, you know, he is the only driver to really meaningfully speak out about racism and misogyny and environmental causes. But at the same time, he really has made activism a part of his brand. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, how he markets himself. So I do think it's fair to look at a project, you know, possibly his biggest project where he's speaking to a global audience and he ostensibly cares very deeply about women in motorsport, but this product has kind of come to fruition. And I do think it's reasonable to say, you know, or to question kind of Lewis's, you know, involvement. And if he put his hand up to, you know, kind of raise questions about it, I'm curious sort of what those conversations were like behind closed doors.
Yeah. Well, one of my highlights from this weekend was Bernie Collins doing a grid walk highlighting all of the women in motorsport. And I saw a TikTok that was like Bernie Collins single-handedly righting the wrongs of the F1 movie.
Yeah.
I loved that.
I know. And it's funny, though, because both her and Ruth Buskin were actually consulted for the film.
Yeah.
And again, like, I'm not sure what those conversations were like behind closed doors. I think perhaps they were kind of brought in maybe a little later in the process, and the creative team perhaps were like, oh, well, this is sort of the script we've got. But I don't know. I mean, they're all award winners. These are, you know, very successful, talented people. I don't think it's unfair to kind of demand a slightly better product or to have hoped that it would have been slightly better. You know, it's not like the women in the film are committing crimes or doing anything terrible. It's just that it could have been a bit better.
Yeah, it's unfortunate when it feels like they tried to go halfway in terms of casting women in important roles, but then displaying them as weak characters. It's just sort of like, it just raises a lot of questions.
For sure.
Well, let's get into Austria, because I think for any new fans who watched the movie and then decided to turn on the TV and watch the Austrian Grand Prix this weekend, they were definitely in for a treat. And I feel like F1 will be happy that this is the first race after the movie came out. But I always do a little bit of a quick, in case you missed it, of some of the highlights throughout the weekend. So I think we can probably jump to quali. So it's a short lap in Austria, which is always fun. It makes it really fun. It's the shortest lap on the calendar. Yeah. And I remember when I went to Austria in 2023, the cars just go by so many times. So I remember saying, like, if you're ever trying to get the most bang for your buck in terms of how many cars you can see in the quickest succession, Austria is the choice. But for quali, Q1, we had the five knockouts. There were Carlos Sainz, Stroll, Yuki, Ocon, and Hülkenberg. We'll get to the Yuki of it all. That was a tough weekend for him. And we got a lot of questions about his future, which we will dive into. But for Q2, the highlight there was the red flag and the grass fire. A grass fire strikes again this season.
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy. But we had Alonso out, Albon out, Hajar, Colapinto, and Ollie Berman. The highlight for me of Q3, at least, was Bortoleto getting into Q3 for the first time this season. He just had such a stellar weekend across the entire Austrian Grand Prix. And then huge pole from Lando Norris, over half a second. That's the biggest pole margin all season. It's his first pole in Austria. And behind him were Charles Leclerc and Oscar Piastri. So that was actually pretty crazy. What did you think of that margin? I mean, half a second is insane.
I mean, I think it was definitely exaggerated by the fact that, you know, Oscar and Max weren't able to get in a final lap because of, I think it was Gasly who had that spin. But, you know, Lando topped all three qualifying sessions and, you know, really put on a dominant performance. I think he needed this. I mean, I'm sure we'll get onto his performance in the race, but after, you know, a really terrible weekend in Montreal, he needed that result.
Yeah, I loved his Instagram caption of just perfect weekend, favorite race up next. So he's got some excitement coming for his home race in Silverstone. But for the race, this was expected to be a two-stop strategy. Almost everyone started on mediums, but several were able to make it a one-stop. Unfortunately, not Lewis Hamilton, which we will talk about as well. But as we said, Lewis was on pole, then Charles, then Oscar behind. One of the big moments at the beginning of the race was Sainz. A lot of people were saying he was kind of pulling a Sonny Hayes there because at the start, if you have seen the movie, you'll know what this scene is, but he couldn't get his car to start. It was stuck in first gear, I think. And then he was able to get going. So there was like a full reset of they were going to have to do a formation lap again. And Sainz was going to start from the pit lane and then his brakes caught on fire and he wasn't able to start, but it was such a
I love that we all had that collective thought of, you know, what is this F1 movie promo in real life? I mean, if you're someone who watched the movie and tuned in for your first race, I mean, gosh, they're probably pointing at the screen like that Leonardo DiCaprio meme, you know? We've seen this before.
Literally. I know. It's like Sainz took some lessons from Brad Pitt. So for the race itself, great start from both of the McLarens. Oscar passed Charles pretty quickly there. The really unfortunate thing on the first lap was Kimi locking up, hitting Verstappen, which took both of them out. And it was only, I think, the second time in the last 75 races that Max has not finished a race, which is just such a sad stat. And Kimi does have a 3-place grid penalty for Silverstone because of that incident. We'll talk about that in a little bit more depth. But really the main highlight of the race was the battle between Oscar and Lando and the fact that the McLarens were able to just race each other. And McLaren was like, yep, go for it. You guys, we trust you to do this. But Lando did hold strong. He took the win. One of the last sillier moments kind of in the race was both Yuki and Franco Colapinto got penalties. Mostly for battling each other at the expense of the race leaders, which
that was
pretty bad. I know. Like an Oscars radio that didn't end up getting played on TV. But did you see that where he was like, the Alpine still manages to bleep me up after all these years?
I know. We saw that and we questioned. We were like, is this real? And I had to reach out to McLaren and say, can you guys just confirm to me that he said this? And they were like, he unfortunately did, but you know, fair play to him. The Alpines ruined his whole, not ruined, but you know, they were trying to foil his plans all weekend from Gasly spinning in qualifying to that bizarre move Colapinto, you know, did pushing him off the track.
Yeah, actually pretty wild. But Lando's win ties him again with Oscar for career wins. They're both at 7. Some other highlights were Lawson at a career best result of P6. It was his second points finish of the season. Both stakes got in the points. So Gabriel Bortoleto's first points in Formula One, which is huge. And then Nico went from P20 to top 10, which is amazing. Yeah, and some fun battling between Gabby and Alonso there at the end. So really fun race. Those were kind of the highlights. And what were your kind of overall thoughts on the race? Did you love it? Was it okay? What were your favorite things?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're lucky that we have this, you know, McLaren battle on our hands this season, because it's kind of shaping up in a way that I don't know that we've ever seen before in Formula One. I think lots of pundits are kind of saying it's going to have to come to blows eventually, you know, it always does. But I do think these two are very, very different characters to someone, or to like, you know, Nico and Lewis. I think they're fostering such a great environment at that team. And I mean, today was the first time that we kind of saw what papaya rules really means. We heard, you know, their race engineers kind of speaking in a way that was indicating, you know, this is our side of the garage where normally they would kind of be communicating together. But, you know, we heard Tom Stallard and Will kind of speaking to them in a way that indicated things might be shifting, you know, a little bit. But they're both, you know, so respectful, so clean on track for the most part. Obviously, we saw that lockup into turn four from Oscar that I think in a way it was so minor, but that kind of defined his race in a way. But, you know, I think Lando's drive is a drive that we wouldn't have seen from him, you know, 2 or 3 years ago, because he really had Oscar putting the pressure on the whole time. And it's the kind of situation that I think, you know, we might have seen Lando, you know, bottle under the pressure, if you will, a couple of seasons ago. So I think it really goes to show his growth. And, you know, I think he's really shaping up to be, you know, world championship material in a lot of people's eyes.
And only 15 points between them, which is just so fun. And exactly to your point, like, this is such a treat. I think a lot of people compare it to the maybe Nico Lewis situation, or at least one or two of those seasons. But I don't know if I totally agree with that parallel either. They're just both so incredibly good. And I think the way McLaren is handling this season, they've gotten a lot of criticism for different moments and different calls that they've made. But I actually do think they're doing a pretty good job at handling a very tough situation with two drivers who are so hungry to be number one, to get a world championship for themselves. So I think that brings us into MVPs, because McLaren allowing the two sides of the garage to race for me was the MVP of this race. Yeah. I think there were so many radios and moments throughout the whole day, or the whole race, where I was like, I actually love this. I think the first one was a radio to Oscar where it was like, your call on the racing situation, which kind of set the tone for the rest of the day. And then I think a lot of the commentators, like David Coulthard, was like, thank you, McLaren, for allowing them to go racing. And Oscar's radio at the end there as well, I think, said it pretty well. He was like, that was good fun. Not sure you guys enjoyed the show, but I hope the fans did, which was good. I think it's really fun for fans to hear that on the radio. It's fun to have two sides of the garage in a healthy way, competing against each other and wanting to win and sort of, I don't know. I thought that was really funny, especially when they were giving Lando pointers too on, I think it was like turn six apex or something. He's like, that if you hit that apex, that will really hurt the other car. And we're like, we know what other car you're talking about.
Yeah. I mean, a bit of a side note to that point, something we were kind of talking about just observationally, it's interesting to hear sort of the communication Lando gets. I feel like it is, you know, relatively thorough. He gets, you know, a lot of communication from his race engineer, whereas that's not the case for Oscar. He kind of is left alone a bit more. And I think that is also quite indicative of their personalities off track perhaps as well. But to your point, I think the way that McLaren's handling it, definitely to Andrea Stella's credit, he is fostering such a fantastic environment at that team. Like, I often go in when I'm on the ground at a race, and I'll go and check in and just say, you know, how are things? And everyone's like, genuinely, it's fantastic. Obviously, that's easy to say when you're winning. But, you know, I think back to that season with Nico and Lewis, and it definitely wasn't a great time to be Mercedes. So, yeah, it's been really fantastic to see. And I mean, I could be wrong in saying this, but I don't think Lando or Oscar want necessarily to be given, you know, preferential treatment when they're both so like for like. I don't think it would be satisfying if, you know, they're told, one of them's told to hold position, or, you know,
totally.
It's
they got to fight it out, and it'll feel that much sweeter for whoever wins. And hopefully whoever doesn't win also feels like they really gave it their best shot and doesn't feel any resentment over what happened.
To be honest, I think that's kind of what, like, in my mind, differentiates them from a lot of other drivers, particularly Lando. I mean, we hear him be so hard on himself, but I also think he knows when Oscar wins a race and Lando comes in, you know, P2 or P3, he knows it's because he just didn't drive as well. You know, for the most part, it's not like we've seen Oscar, you know, taking him out, or, you know, vice versa. Lando is not, you know, taking Oscar out. I think they know that, like, when they're finishing in second, it's like, oh, I probably didn't have as good of a race. And they're both, like, very realistic with themselves. Whereas I think some other drivers would probably try and make excuses. And that's not something we ever really see from either of them.
I remember feeling so relieved and feeling that exact point when Oscar had his big, or sorry, when Lando had his big mistake and ended his race. And the first thing he said on the radio was like, my bad. And he took responsibility for it and he knew it was his mistake. And I just felt so relieved and just like, okay, this is good. You understand that. Yeah. You just got to be honest with yourself about whose fault is what, but yeah. So that was my MVP. I guess I'll also give a second MVP to the sort of Sauber renaissance. Double points, Gabby's first points in Formula One, which is huge. Nico's huge recovery drive. I think it's 3 point weekends in a row for him, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
It's been a good run for him for sure.
Yeah. But how about you? What was your MVP?
Oh, I mean, look, you've taken sort of my top two out of my mouth. I mean, if we're just talking drivers, I think, you know, it's hard to deny that it was, you know, Lando's weekend. It was such a commanding drive and he needed it to kind of keep that momentum in his corner, especially heading into the British Grand Prix. I think he'll be, you know, feeling good. But sort of, you know, more broadly, I think, you know, Stella and the team are doing such a fantastic job there. And then also, as you mentioned, Bortoleto, I mean, I think the lack of points was possibly starting to get to him a little bit. And we've seen most of the rookies so far, you know, kind of have a bit of a breakout moment. And I think we saw the same thing for Liam Lawson this weekend too, you know, scoring some points, getting that kind of monkey off their back a little bit. But just so happy for Bortoleto and that lovely moment at the end with Fernando Alonso and then also with Hülkenberg, you know, it's exciting for the team.
Totally agree. The Alonso moment was funny, and especially given the fact that Alonso is Gabriel Bortoleto's manager. So I think that just adds such a fun dynamic to the whole thing.
One of the journalists asked him, in the pen, you know, because he's your manager, does he get a bonus when you score points? How does that work? And he was like, oh, I'll have to go look into the contract.
I know. Maybe it's in Fernando Alonso's best interest to let Gabby have more points. You should have let him buy.
Right?
Depending on the contract. Yeah, who knows? Well, how about your LVP? I'll let you go first so I don't take it.
Ooh, well, I feel like we're probably going to get onto this at some point, but it has to be Yuki Tsunoda. Yeah. I mean, there's just no reason he should be running around the back of the field, crashing into Colapinto, making these mistakes that look like he's been driving in F1 for 5 minutes. I mean, with, you know, that incident that took Max out on lap one, Red Bull really needed Yuki to have just a solid drive, and he's really struggled to put it together. I mean, he was totally dejected after the race as well, and I think he's just still totally puzzled about what is not making sense to him about this car. And, you know, it's clear that this is a car that's built for Max Verstappen. Everyone who comes into this second driver role has effectively failed. But it's just, honestly, it's just not good enough.
Yeah, I agree. And it sort of leaves you scratching your head and being like, what does Red Bull do next? Do they put Isaac Hadjar in the car? Do they give Liam Lawson another chance? Like, I don't know what they do at this point, and I don't know if all of these drivers failing in the second seat is just a symptom of the fact that they've designed a car for one person or if there's something else going on there. But especially what we'll talk about, the whole Max to Mercedes rumors as well. But like, Red Bull is not going to be in a great position if Max does decide to leave. And look, I know the regulations are changing next year, so maybe the car will be very different. But if they have decided to build a car around one driver again, like, they're really going to be in a tough position. But I agree about Yuki. It's really a tough look for him, and it just makes you wonder why it's happening. But getting fully lapped in a Red Bull on merit, essentially, and then that 10-second penalty, the announcers called it a test session. It was really bad. But yeah, so I'll definitely agree with that LVP. And then I would give my sort of relatedly other LVP to just backmarkers holding up race leaders. Oscar's radio was like a perfect encapsulation of this. But I don't understand how that is allowed. And especially at the end there, too, with Oscar being held up by Alonso and Gabby Bortoleto as well. It's just sort of like, how is that right?
I know. I'll have to go and look at like what the actual wording is in sort of the FIA guidelines, because, you know, if you get blue flags, you have to move aside. And I think it's tricky because in a situation like that, that train that the leaders came up to of Lawson, Alonso, Bortoleto, you know, that was a pretty good midfield battle, you know, there, especially Bortoleto and Lawson, you know, battling it out for points that, you know, mean a lot to them. It is a little bit different to Colapinto and Yuki crashing into each other for last place. Like, that was just ridiculous. And it honestly looked a bit amateurish. Like, there's no reason why, you know, the championship leader should be getting taken out by the guy running in last. It's just, not good enough.
Yes, it is. It's amateurish for sure. Mm-hmm. Well, let's dive into some of the other race discussion points. Some of them we haven't talked about. Some of them we got questions from listeners on. So let's go through everything we haven't yet discussed. I think relatedly to what we were just talking about is the George Russell contract question. And there were some comments made by both George and Toto Wolff ahead of the race weekend, both about the sort of contract situation in general and then also vis-a-vis Max Verstappen. So George's contract ends at the end of this season. And it sort of felt like up until this point, it was relatively standard contract procedure. Things were going to get signed. It was just a matter of like when they're inking the contract. But the comments this weekend, especially made by George, makes me feel like maybe there's a little more trouble in paradise than we expected. And Toto being so open about the fact that they are talking to other drivers, Max Verstappen being one of them, it just makes you question what will happen. I think George has done everything he possibly can to get that renewal. He's driven incredibly well so far this season. He's really stepped into that number one driver role and taken Kimi under his wing and sort of stepped outside of the shadow, for lack of a better term, of Lewis Hamilton last season and always sort of being the number two. I just don't know if Max would ever go to Mercedes. I have a hard time thinking that is realistic, but I guess you also never know. I'm curious what you think about this whole thing and what you think will happen.
Yeah, it's all a bit funny, isn't it? I mean, I think the realistic thing is that Max holds all of the cards here in this situation. You know, he's four-time world champion. He is paid handsomely at Red Bull. He, you know, lacks the team. He's got a lot of, you know, authority at this point within the Red Bull organization, but he obviously wants to be competitive. He wants to win. So I don't think we can totally rule out the idea of him leaving Red Bull, although it almost feels illegal to imagine him wearing something other than a Red Bull polo shirt. So I guess it becomes a question then of, you know, how long is Toto Wolff willing to wait around? I've sort of been in the camp of thinking we might see Max making a move for 27, because realistically it's going to be a very, very hard sell for Toto or for any other team boss, because until we see, you know, the 26 cars on track at testing in January next year, it's almost impossible to know just how they're going to stack up against each other. So it's almost, I personally think, you know, I don't know everything, but I think it would be kind of silly for Max to take that gamble at this point. But on the Mercedes side, I think the reason why we're kind of hearing these question marks about George is because, you know, he has been like there or thereabouts throughout his whole time at the team. You know, he's oftentimes best of the rest. But I don't know that he is exactly who they want to build, you know, this next era of the team around. I think, I don't want to say struggling, but the team is definitely figuring out their identity in sort of a post-Lewis Hamilton world. And Toto has been very, very adamant that he wants to give Kimi time to grow and learn and make mistakes, and doesn't want him to be front and center. He doesn't want, you know, a media storm around him. So, you know, it's not like they're going to put Kimi front and center tomorrow. So they kind of need someone else to take the lead. And I do think it's a bit unfortunate for George, because as you say, he's done everything he can. I don't know how accurate this is, but I do kind of think that he hasn't got like the star power that a brand like Mercedes probably wants. I mean, Toto's obviously business minded as well as being someone who's totally astute with, you know, the on-track stuff. That's just my assumption. That's just my speculation. Yeah. But again, as you say, would Max ever go to Mercedes? Who knows?
Yeah. All of those are great points. And I feel like I totally agree. It would be kind of strange of Max to take a gamble when the regulations are switching so drastically. Although I guess I would probably put my money on the Mercedes car over the Red Bull car next year, just given Honda leaving, given the whole Red Bull building their own engines. I think that's going to be an interesting factor. But yeah, I totally agree. And I do think the unfortunate reality for George is if Max decides to go to Mercedes, and Toto, of course, will say yes to that, I don't think it's Kimmy they're going to kick out, not someone that they've invested so much time in, who's young, who may be the next Max Verstappen, who's like shown a lot of promise in his first rookie season and seems to have a lot of the raw speed and talent and potential star power that I think the Mercedes team would want to build their next era around, to your point. So, yeah, I think that puts George in a little bit of a tricky situation, but he is an incredibly talented driver. And yeah, I don't think Max and George will be teammates anytime soon. So I think it would be.
Could you imagine?
I would that love would it just for the drama.
Yeah, that would be phenomenal, wouldn't it?
But part of me almost feels like Max would look at Aston before he looks at Mercedes, just because of the Honda of it all, because of Adrian Newey, because of the huge budget that that team has. Not that Mercedes doesn't have a huge budget, but I just think that Aston Martin is having a tough season this season, but it seems like all of their investment and all the eggs they've put into the 2026 and beyond basket. So I feel like Max would look at Aston at least alongside Mercedes.
There have been a few stories that have come out, that have come out that have been, you know, ultimately like debunked, but stories about, you know, Max having conversations with Aston and them offering him a $1 billion package that obviously involved, you know, stocks, not just salary.
Yeah.
But as you say, they've got budget. You know, Max is paid a lot of money. I think wherever he goes next, he probably wants to maintain that, if not make a bit more. So I think it's definitely a possibility.
Definitely.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams 4th of July sale and get 30% off paints and stains June 27th through July 7th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
All right, next topic. We haven't talked much about Ferrari, but they brought upgrades. They have a new floor this weekend, and the team seemed pretty happy. I mean, they were definitely the second fastest car behind the McLarens. Charles was very happy after qualifying. He thought the upgrades looked good after he was looking at the quali gaps, qualified on the front row. And then even Hamilton seemed in a better mood than usual, although obviously not with the strategy decision. Well, let's talk about the upgrades first, and then we'll get to the Hamilton strategy situation. But it seems like they seem to have worked well.
Yeah, they definitely do. And I think particularly after qualifying is when we heard both of them, particularly Lewis, like he was so happy.
Yeah.
And it is funny to think about, you know, the Lewis we knew a couple of years ago would never have been, you know, so buoyant almost over a, what did he qualify, P4? But I think it goes to show just how much he's, you know, struggled with adapting to this car, particularly alongside Charles, who knows the car so well, who barely ever changes the setup. I think, you know, Lewis in particular feels like he's kind of coming to grips with it. And we obviously saw in the race, you know, they were the second quickest car, P3, P4, but not to play devil's advocate, but, you know, who were they really racing against? You know, Max Verstappen wasn't there storming through the field. The Mercedes car sees a sunny day and, you know, runs the opposite direction. I don't think Mercedes were ever, you know, really in contention. Very hot conditions today in Austria. Yeah. You know, you got Yuki Tsunoda running around in P16. So I think they got a little bit lucky. But, you know, the upgrades seem to be working, I think, is the long and short of it. I'm curious to see sort of how things look next week at Silverstone.
Yeah, for sure. It's always a little bit of a roller coaster sometimes with Ferrari. So you got to see consistency before you can say definitively whether or not something
always a roller coaster
is working. But it's good to see the drivers happier than usual, at least. And yeah, I think it signaled a positive thing to me that Hamilton wanted to stay out, that the tire degradation was not as bad as he thought, and he seemed to be feeling good in the car. I'm so curious. A lot of listeners ask questions about this. Like, why? What was Ferrari seeing that Lewis was not, that they would tell one of the best drivers of all time who's saying, I want to stay out, it's only 20 laps left, let me stay out, my tires are good, to force him into the pits? Like, what could they possibly be seeing that
he
wasn't?
I guess from their perspective, they're, you know, looking at a weekend where Max and Kimmy are out, George is nowhere, Yuki is nowhere. They have got P3 and P4 on lock. These are, you know, important points for them in the constructors. You know, let's not risk a tire blowing up or you know, an issue will pit you. And I do think the two stop actually was ultimately a bit quicker than the one stop. And I think they were probably saying, you know, like even if, you know, Lewis was able to race Charles for P3, I don't think that was as of much importance to the team. I think they were like, let's just make sure, you know, we're bringing these points home and not risk a potential issue if we stay out on, was he on the hards? I think at that point that he was saying, I
can't remember.
Yeah, I would assume that's probably it, but you know, it's a good question because obviously Lewis was so adamant that he could stay out, but I think they were probably looking at everything and saying, let's just play it safe. You know, let's make sure we get these cars home.
Yeah, for sure. I think you never know when your tires are just going to go. So even if they feel good for, you know, however many laps, if you do have 20 laps to go, I guess there's always a risk that something can happen.
Yeah,
so maybe that was the right call, but I felt bad for him because I think he felt that maybe a podium could have been in the cards, but
yeah,
maybe next time, maybe Silverstone, we'll see.
And he loves that track. So yeah. I feel like you can never count Lewis Hamilton out at Silverstone.
Exactly. Back-to-back wins. We'll see.
Yeah.
Okay. Next topic was the Max retirement and the Kimi mistake. So Max on the radio when it happened did swear, called them bleeping idiots. But then when he got out of the car, he was very calm. And his comments after the race too, saying that Kimi, you know, came quickly to his hospitality and apologized. He admitted that every driver makes these kinds of mistakes. Nobody does it on purpose. It felt like a more mature Max. And I wonder if that was because it was a rookie and it was Kimi. Maybe if it had been a driver like Lando or George, God forbid George, it would have been a different situation. But I sort of enjoyed that that reaction from Max. I thought that was maybe less characteristic than usual, but sweet.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, as fiery as Max can be, I do think he is very like realistic and very analytical. And I do think he's probably come to the realization that this championship battle is going to come down to Lando and Oscar. I mean, I'm not sure if you saw Helmut Marko after the race said, you know, it's we're not in this fight anymore. I guess, you know, it's not like Kimi intentionally took him out. I think he, you know, came out of that incident, realized I'm not fighting for the championship this year. No one's intentionally taken me out. You know, he kind of didn't have a reason to yell and scream in the media pen. You know, it might've been a different story, as you say, if it was a different driver. But yeah, I mean, as he said, it was a rookie era. Everyone's made those mistakes, particularly Max when he first came into the sport. Something I'd be curious to get your thoughts on, actually, because we were talking about it in the office today, was his comments after the race when he was asked about something to do with Yuki, and he said, oh, I actually didn't watch the race. I was watching the 24 hours of Spa. And obviously he had his GT3 car that won I forget which category they were in, but they had a good day. But ultimately, Red Bull is this team that has this car that's built around Max, and he has a teammate that is fighting for his life at the back of the pack to try and figure out how this car works. At what point should we be seeing Max, you know, go sit on the pit wall and try and help your team out? What are your thoughts on that?
I fully agree. I think at the end of the day, it's a team game, right? And I don't know if that's, I don't want to speak poorly on Max, but I'm not sure that that's front of mind for him. Like he loves to just put his head down, sort of tunnel vision, race hard, win. Otherwise he's on the sim or doing his other kind of racing pursuits outside the track. But it is, I think, a really good point and a good question of, you see these teams that have built really nurturing environments around a driver. And I know some people are, I guess, critical of that in a way of like, if you're going to be in Formula One, you have to cut it. Like, we can't just kind of handhold you through this process. You need to be able to do that. But I think the investment and the nurturing of a driver sets everyone up to succeed more than just sort of letting someone figure it out on their own. And Yuki's not someone that Max has a poor relationship with. So I would kind of expect him to think about helping. And maybe he does do that behind the scenes. We don't know what like the debriefs are like or the engineering meetings within the team. But it is a bummer. And it sort of feels like a sad, I guess, I don't know, approach to just be like, I didn't even watch the race. It's like, yeah, you have a teammate out there too, you know? Like, don't you want to know what's going on?
Yeah.
We'll see if you can help.
No, sorry. Yeah, it's a good point. Like, we don't know what happens behind closed doors. And I really rate Max. I think he's a good person. And I think over the years, there's been a lot of talk about his demeanor. But, you know, I always find him entertaining and, you know, very respectful. But it is kind of one area where we see, you know, someone like Carlos will always go and, you know, put a headset on the garage or jump on the pit wall. And, you know, a team like Williams love working with him for that reason. He gives really good feedback. He's a real team player.
Yeah.
And that's not to say, you know, all drivers need to have that mindset. I just think it's something we hear a lot from Max. And this is a team that has had, gosh, like 5 or 6 number two drivers now that just are failing because this is a car built for him.
Yeah.
Does he have, you know, a responsibility to be a little bit more of a team player? I don't know. I mean, it's definitely not in his nature, but it's just something we're kind of discussing.
I think that's such a good point. And maybe that is the Max Verstappen privilege of being the best driver out there, and you're just that successful. And if someone else is not stepping up to what you think their potential is, and I don't know. Maybe he doesn't feel like it's his role to lend a hand and help that person out. But I do think it would be nice to see a little more of that because,
definitely.
I don't know. I can't tell if he's just checked out because, to your point, maybe he's not as much in the contention for the Drivers' Championship, or he's frustrated with everybody asking him about penalty points in a race ban and he's a new father and he just has like other things on his mind. I wonder if he's just a little bit more checked out.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
Don't ask him about penalty points. He won't be happy about that.
Well, he's, I think, in the clear, right? Wasn't it the end of the Austrian Grand Prix weekend?
Yeah.
So he's got a couple points expiring, which means he has made it safely to Silverstone without a race ban.
Yeah, we'll see him in the UK.
Okay, I guess relatedly, maybe quickly on Yuki, what do we think happens with his seat? Do you think they'll put Hadjar in? Should Hadjar take that deal if he's offered it?
I spent a little bit of time with Isaac Hadjar here in New York before the F1 movie premiere. And I really, really like him. And he's been adamant that he does not want to go to Red Bull yet. I think that Red Bull can recognize that. And I have a feeling they're not going to replace Tsunoda for the rest of this season. I think it's in their best interest to let Isaac Hadjar develop. And I mean, I've heard some other journalists sort of speak about this. I think it was Andrew Benson who was saying that he spoke to Helmut Marko and said, here's, you know, what I think is going to happen, that next year Yuki Tsunoda is gone, Isaac Hadjar steps up, and then Arvid Lindblad goes to VCarb. And he said that Helmut Marko just sort of smiled and walked away. So, you know, I think that's sort of an indication of where things are heading. You know, Yuki Tsunoda has had his time to prove himself, and he's really not driving like someone who has, you know, 5 years of experience.
No. And he was doing really well in the VCarb, so it's just kind of strange to see. Maybe those cars are just so vastly different, it's hard to even compare, but it's such a bummer. Okay, last main topic before we get into the standings and then talk really briefly about Silverstone is Williams. So a lot of listeners submitted questions about Williams. It wasn't really covered very much. Obviously, we saw what happened with Carlos at the beginning of the race, but then Albon also retired with an issue. And so it seems, I was just reading the Williams sort of press release afterwards, and they were basically just like, we need to look into it. It's not good enough, and reliability is a huge issue for us, and we don't fully understand why. But it's such a bummer because they started the season on such a high with a lot of momentum, and I still think that they can hopefully regain that. But the past several races have really been tough for them.
Yeah, what a nightmare weekend for Williams. And it's unfortunate because they had such a fantastic start to the year, you know, really positive with Carlos coming in, you know, and James Vowles really settled into that role. But yeah, as you say, we're not entirely sure what caused either of their issues. I don't think they even know either yet. But I understand they have some sort of cooling and reliability issues, which we also saw in Montreal. And I believe they have kind of switched focus to the 2026 car. They're one of the first teams to do so. I mean, every team is going to have to make that call at some point this year. But the issue they're going to face is that teams like Sauber have bought upgrades that are clearly really working. I mean, this was a double points finish for them. And perhaps in James Vowles' mind, they've kind of carved out enough of a lead that they thought, you know, we can switch our focus. So I do think they should be a bit concerned about a few of their competitors, you know, bringing these upgrades and possibly, you know, taking them to task throughout the rest of the season, because realistically, we're not even halfway through yet.
Yeah, 100%. Williams is sitting in fifth, but Racing Bulls is only 19 points behind. And then Haas isn't that far back. And then Aston Martin, it gets pretty tight. And so there are millions of dollars at stake for every position in that championship. So I'm sure they know what they're doing, but it's unfortunate to see reliability issues that they can't figure out or are kind of confused about where that's coming from, especially if you have shifted focus, because then it's like, oh my gosh, we have so many races ahead of us. What is it, 13 or something like that? Races ahead of us.
It's a long,
long time.
And I feel like they've got like so many factors at Williams are finally like working. They've got this great driver lineup, the management, you know, everyone's doing a really good job. It's a really, really good vibe at the team right now. It's just so unfortunate they're having these issues. It must be so frustrating for you know, the mechanics, for everyone to walk away with no points.
Totally. And especially fresh off of James Vowles' contract renewal, which everybody was so excited about. And it's too bad to have it happen at this stage. Okay, let's wrap up with some standings and then talk quickly about Silverstone. So the Drivers' Championship, we have Oscar Piastri with 216 and then Lando Norris with 201, so only 15 points separating them. Max is in P3 with 155 and then George with 146 and then Charles with 119. So that's the top five. It's pretty tight for some of these drivers. So there's still a lot to play for, still more than half the season left to go. So there's hard to count anyone out. And I would not count Max Verstappen out of the Drivers' Championship yet. He's got a lot.
That's a good point. I shouldn't have said that earlier, that he's totally out of it. I mean, even though Helmut Marko seems to think that, you know, it's not in the cards, I feel like Max Verstappen feels almost inevitable. Like for so many years, I thought you could start him in the pit lane, like three laps down, and he would still win the race. So that's a good point. We can't count him out yet.
You never know. Four constructors, McLaren at 417, Ferrari 210, Mercedes 209. So they're really, really close. Red Bull at 162, and then Williams in fifth, and it just sort of drops from there. But yeah, McLaren well ahead of everyone, almost double Ferrari, and I think they'll cinch the constructors almost for sure. Again, you never know, but it seems inevitable. So I think that will come down the pike soon enough. Okay, for Silverstone, it's already this weekend, and Em, you're going, so that's going to be fun. Is this your first time? What are you excited for?
It's my first Silverstone. I mean, it's always over 4th of July weekend for us here in the US. I should have said I'm based in New York, not Australia these days. So I'm very excited. I think, you know, the atmosphere, the vibe. I mean, I went to Monaco for the first time this year and it was so special. I think, you know, being in the media center at a lot of races, you really don't get to go out and properly, you know, get a sense for the vibe. But somewhere like Silverstone is so historic. It's such a phenomenal track. I think, you know, there's potential for a few different people to do well. I mean, we mentioned Lewis loves this track, so I feel like you can't rule anyone out. I'm very, very excited.
Yeah, it's going to be so great. And a lot of drivers, home races, and a lot of teams, home races. Most factories are in the UK, so it's a pretty easy one for them. And I think everybody gets really excited about it. It's a very iconic, historic, fast track. It's one of the fastest tracks on the calendar with a lot of fast corners, which is really fun. But Lewis won last year, as we mentioned. I think that was one of the most magical cinematic moments in F1, just him winning his home race after a lot of struggles, his last home race with Mercedes. So that was hard to top. End it with some hot takes and predictions for the next race. So do you have any predictions? Can be anything.
See, as an Australian, I mean, professionally, I am, you know, I'm not biased. I'm very impartial. But as an Australian, I am always wanting the best for Oscar Piastri. But I do think it would be really nice to see Lando win the British Grand Prix.
It would be amazing.
Yeah, I would be happy for him to take home a win. Hot take. give me your prediction, then I'll come back to a hot take.
Okay, my prediction is I'm going to say a Lewis podium. I know that's also kind of doubling as my hot take, but I'm going to say a Lewis podium.
Okay, love that. Let's say some more Sauber points and some more points for Liam Lawson. I think he deserves a little run of good fortune. He's had such a terrible start to the season, and he's not a bad driver. I really quite rate him. So it was nice to see him and Bortoleto do well this weekend.
Agreed. I'm all here for the rookies. Yeah. All right. You heard it here first, but thank you so much for joining. This was such a fun race to recap, and I hope you have the best time in Silverstone. I can't wait to see the content and follow along.
Oh, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. It was, great to chat, and very much looking forward to Silverstone.
Get started on your painting project this summer and save big money at Menards. Rust-Oleum Stops Rust 5-in-1 Spray Paint lets you choose from 5 unique spray patterns with a twist of the dial, so you can get a professional, corrosion-resistant finish on every project. Save big money on Rust-Oleum Spray Paint now at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money.